The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Welcome into a special episode of Stone Cold Tros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Palolo and Josh Jordan. Follow them on X at Palolo and at JoshJordan975 and read their work on sportsmap.com. Astros have reached an agreement with first baseman Christian Walker. So, gents, it's been an eventful offseason already. We've had Tucker get traded away. Nolan Arenado blocks a trade to Houston. And now the Astros sign Christian Walker to put it first, which means Paredes plays third and essentially ends Bregman's time in Houston. Walker signs a three-year, $60 million deal, and now in doing so, Houston will lose their second and fifth highest picks at the draft due to Walker declining his qualifying offer from Arizona. However, they'll eventually get a comp pick back after the fourth round when Bregman presumably signs with another team since he declined his qualifying offer, only one because they had already paid the CBT last season. Houston's infield now is likely Diaz, Walker, Altuve, Pena, and Paredes. So what do you guys think of this deal? And do you think the Astros have upgraded their infield?
Well, this is a good signing. Is there risk? Of course. But Christian Walker is a shorter-term risk. I think it's a better play for the Astros, signing Walker 3 years, $60 million, than meeting Bregman's ultimate price, 7 years, $200 million, whatever he gets. Walker is basically 3 years, almost to the day, older than Alex Bregman. So you have Walker for his 34, 35, 36 seasons. Those will be the fourth, fifth, and sixth years of Bregman's contract. Well, Christian Walker, a better offensive player than Alex Bregman. They're both slow pokes, so it's about what they do in the batter's box. Christian Walker is also not a high on-base percentage guy, but 2024 Alex Bregman wasn't either. The Astros lose a Gold Glove corner infielder in Bregman. They add a Gold Glove corner infielder in Christian Walker. Three straight Gold Gloves in the National League. John Singleton, poor defensive first baseman by any and all metrics, whether Caratini or Diaz there, not a plus defender. So this is a good pivot. You mentioned the loss of draft choices. I have the Astros now at roughly $5 million below the first CBT threshold. They were well over that last season. If they're serious about competing at the highest level without going crazy financially to do so, they now can have another move in them, right? Tucker's money out. Walker comes in at a bit higher price, $20 million to Tucker's $16, $17, whatever he gets in arbitration. Well, Bregman, $20 million off the books, keeping him would have been closer to $30. Isak Paredes will be somewhere in the $5 million ballpark. So there is flexibility. Enough to get Anthony Santander? I doubt it. Jurickson Profar is another guy out there. And let me mention with Profar, he's a switch hitter. One thing about how it nets out so far this offseason, the Astros lineup is even more lopsidedly right-handed. Yordan Alvarez is the only left-handed bat in the lineup, except for when Caratini is in there. The outfield remains basically a horror show in what they project to run out there. Jacob Melton is a left-handed hitter. Boy, they need a prospect to hit, or they better add a major league outfielder.
I find this kind of funny that this is almost the Jose Abreu contract, what they're giving him here. It's, you know, right around 3 years, $60 million. But the difference is that Abreu was 36 in his first year with the Astros with the contract. So they're going a little younger here, and I think it's going to pay off. What was really shocking to me was looking at his Christian Walker's Baseball Savant page and then looking at Nolan Arenado's. My God, how is Arenado the first option that, thank goodness, he, you know, flexed his no trade clause? Like, what were they thinking? I mean, you know, for those that don't really look at Baseball Savant, I'll make it simple. Red is good, blue is bad. Red all over Walker's page, blue all over Arenado's page, man. It is terrible. I mean, his expected batting average, expected slugging, barrel percentage, hard hit percentage, I mean, god awful. And Walker's really good in those categories. So I'm surprised that Arenado was really going to be a real answer for them. I guess it really was all about money, and then maybe they would have spent some of that money they saved to address the outfield. I at least hope that was the plan, that it wasn't just one of these two things. But I think it's a great addition here. He's going to play well in Minute Maid Park. He pulls the ball, kind of similar to Paredes. They're going to take advantage of the Crawford boxes. And yeah, the outfield it's going to be poor unless they make a big move there. So to answer your question, Brandon, yeah, I think the infield's going to be really good. It better be, because the outfield, there are a lot of questions out there.
Christian Walker's been an 800-plus OPS guy the last three seasons. He's an extreme late bloomer. He didn't become a viable major leaguer until he was 28 years old. He's had a fine run with the Diamondbacks. Of course, it's not like a running back who early in his career didn't get playing time. And wow, look at all the tread wear you saved on his tires. So it's not like Walker's going to be good for an additional 5 years on the back end, because from ages 22 to 27, he wasn't a real big leaguer. But the Astros get a good big leaguer. They also get a bunch more strikeouts relative to Alex Bregman. The Astros have been a low strikeout team through the years, a little bit less so in 2024, along with drawing many fewer walks, giving away too many at-bats, early count outs, and so forth. And Bregman became a culprit of that in 2024 relative to his whole career. Walker draws a middling number of walks, 50s, 60s. He basically a 325, 330 on base percentage guy. Bregman was 315 last season, which was by far the worst full season of Bregman's career in that category. But that they are so tilted now to right-handed hitting, it's going to make them vulnerable to right-handed pitching, especially power right-handed bullpens.
I've seen some reaction from Yankees fans that are not thrilled by this news, because it does help fortify Houston's infield, which had looked weak prior to this move, especially since it was thought they were not going to bring Bregman back. New York had reported interest in Walker to fill their need at first. Reports are now that they're going to pivot to Paul Goldschmidt. The rumors out of New York media right now are that the Yankees aren't necessarily enthusiastic about Bregman, at least at the current asking price. So I guess join the club. With the roster as it stands right now, what do you guys think the batting order looks like currently?
They have on-base percentage problems. Altuve is going to continue to lead off. Your one left-handed bat, your best offensive player by far now with Kyle Tucker gone. So do you keep Yordan in the two hole where Joe Espada started him last season and then worked back to? Or do you want Yordan in the more traditional RBI spot in the three hole? I don't have a big problem with having your best player bat second, which over a season is roughly 15 more plate appearances than a guy batting third. Not a huge number, but hey, if I can get 15 more trips to the plate for Yordan. But then it's the parade of right-handed hitters. Paredes is the next best on-base percentage guy in their lineup after Yordan and Altuve. Now, Paredes is another slow guy, but if you're on first, you can just trot around the bases if you're on homers. So maybe at this point you go Altuve 1, Paredes 2, Yordan 3, Walker 4, Diaz 5, and then you sort out the riffraff 6 through 9.
I'm with Charlie on that. I don't really have any arguments there. You put the best guys on top, and Yordan either at 2 or 3, whichever they want to do. They kind of flipped him around last year. I'm cool with that. The one other thing I wanted to hit on with this is we're talking about, you know, moving Yiner over to first base. Doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime soon with this move. It looks like you have your first baseman for the next several years, Yiner. And to get the most bang out of your buck with the lineup, putting a hitter like Diaz at catcher, that's a good way to do it there. Now first base is really good and third base. And we'll see if Pena can kind of show anything there at shortstop. Altuve can keep playing like he has. Hopefully we don't see a decline there. And speaking of decline, the only real kind of concern I had with Walker was looking at his numbers before the All-Star break and then after the All-Star break last year. Pretty big difference. He hit 264 the break, 495 slug, 838 OPS, 22 home runs. That was over 97 games. After the All-Star break, he hit 207, 378 slug, 4 home runs in 33 games. So that's something to kind of keep in mind there. He suffered an oblique injury. So he didn't play at all in the month of August from what I was looking at. So that's part of this too. While there weren't as many home runs, as many opportunities for him, maybe that's why after the All-Star break, he wasn't as good. And also maybe he wasn't really fully 100% coming back from that oblique strain if he missed all of August. So that was just kind of one of my thoughts there, that hopefully it was the injury, not decline, as to why he didn't play as well after the break last year.
You mentioned the lack of lefty bats, Charlie, in this lineup. John Singleton was a lefty bat that platooned at first for most of the season last year. Do you think John still has a place in the dugout on this team?
Yes, because who else is there at this point? He was the send him up and hope for a lucky long ball, left-handed pinch hitter of choice. In certain spots, you're like, really, Joe Espada? But Singleton, when you added it up at the end of the season, now maybe he just had a nice little spurt over his head, certainly way over his head relative to his career. But he had a 775 OPS against right-handed pitching in 2024. 775 OPS is better than what Alex Bregman was as a player in 2024. Will Yordan be playing any left field? If so, those are days where you can spot a Diaz or Caratini at first base, give Walker the occasional DH start, even though that's taking your best defensive first baseman off the field. But when you look at the Astros, right, you're carrying 13 pitchers, which is kind of the norm these days. You're carrying 13 non-pitchers. So what we would project to be the starting nine, eight of whom we can name, and then third outfielder to be determined. Then your bench is whoever's not your starting catcher, predominantly Caratini. Mauricio Dubon, I think Zach DiCenzo probably makes the roster, positional versatility. And Singleton, at this point, those to me would probably be the 13 guys on the roster coming out of spring training, non-pitchers.
We talked at length last season about the offensive struggles and challenges for Houston. They paled in comparison to the offensive struggles for a team like Seattle. And we talked a little bit about the offensive regression that happened for the Rangers. How do you think this current lineup, as it stands now, and granted, there's still room to make a maneuver here. There's still outfield positions that may or may not be addressed, whether it's free agency or trade here. But as it's currently constructed, where do you think they fit now relative to their rivals in the division?
Within the division, they have the best lineup. I mean, were the 2023 Texas Rangers their true offensive level, or did a bunch of guys collectively have, if not career years, had well above average years, and then 2024 reality bit? I mean, the Mariners keep on twiddling their thumbs. They've been linked on Christian Walker, but he makes at least a mid-level pay grade, so the Mariners sit it out. If I'm an Astros fan, I'd hope that they wind up getting desperate and overpay for Pete Alonso. I don't think they will if they weren't going to bid high enough on Christian Walker. 3 years, $60 million should not have been prohibitive for Seattle. Oakland was a pretty good ball club after the All-Star break, but they're not adding any offense. And the Angels, as usual, just don't matter. So within the American League West, as we talk, the Astros are the favorite to win this division again.
Yeah, I think the offense is going to be pretty good. You know, you lost some great hitters, obviously, in Tucker and Bregman, but they're kind of trying to moneyball this thing and find ways to replace that production using other players to get it done. So, yeah, I think the offense will be good, especially in this division. I think the big part of this is Fromber. You know, we've talked about it. Should they go ahead and go all in and you know, on the rebuild or the reset, whatever you want to call it? You know, now we're seeing reports this week that teams have been calling about Fromber, but the Astros aren't looking to deal him. So with that being the case, I think they're going to be really competitive in this division, and they should make another run to the postseason. So I think Fromber's a big part of that. What are they going to do with Fromber going forward? Who knows? Do these moves make it more likely they might entertain giving him a long-term contract? Probably not, but who knows? Maybe. You know, Jim Crane, he loves left-handed pitchers, man. That's apparently like his deal. So we'll see going forward. But yeah, Brad, I think, you know, offense is going to be pretty good. And you wonder, is there a deal coming where maybe they move Presley and find a way to bring in another outfielder? Because we've heard rumors about them looking to dump that salary of Presley. Would any team really be interested in it? Who knows? But that'd be something I'd keep my eye on here, you know, up until the spring training gets started.
I mentioned earlier that the Astros are now ballpark of $235 million on the books that count toward the competitive balance tax. That's your major league roster. That is benefits that all teams must pay, the contribution to the pre-arbitration bonus pool to which all teams must make a contribution, Everyone on your 40-man roster, not on your major league ball club. You have to account for that. That's another couple million. So you add that all up, the Astros are at about 235. More than a quarter of that is the dead stuff. Abreu, 19.5. Montero, 11.5. McCullers, until or unless we see otherwise, 17 million. And Javier, at least the first half of the season, who knows, maybe all of it, his 12.8. Those four guys are $60.8 million that are an anvil dragging down the Astros, doing enough to satisfy all the fans. But they are not doing things on the cheap. The 2025 Astros are paying the price for the terrible contracts and injury issues that have them wasting tens of millions of dollars that they cannot possibly escape from for 2025.
To Charlie's point, with all those deals falling off the books for the most part after this season, maybe there is some money in the budget for Fromber. You know, Charlie, he makes a good point. They're going to shed a lot of salary after this season.
Dana Brown was taking criticism with the Tucker trade. Did he get enough? The Arenado trade, what are you thinking? But if the goal was to proactively avoid Tucker walking because they were not going to pay in the neighborhood of $300 to $400 million, now they've made a move that basically prevents Bregman from holding the team hostage. There's still work to be done, obviously, but how do you think Brown has navigated this? Because we talked about how he was really going to have to earn his money this offseason because of all the financial challenges. How do you think Dana Brown has handled this so far?
Well, I think blasting the guy when I think we have consensus that they're still the favorites in the division. They're not a superpower team anymore. Right? The Astros do not have a great roster. They don't have a great lineup. But they're still good. And so navigating around the financial minefield steps because of the bad contracts. It is interesting that Dana Brown, his entire background and the sell point, Dana Brown is drafting and player development. And, you know, on multiple occasions since he's become the GM, they're forfeiting draft picks and trading prospects, but they haven't traded one premium prospect. It's a sad silver lining of not having any premium prospects. The Astros, maybe I'm missing one. They have not made a first or second round draft pick that's become a good major leaguer since Alex Bregman and Kyle Tucker were in that same draft class in 2015. So a couple of years, they forfeited the first and second round picks because of the cheating punishment. And they've been picking late in the rounds every year. But to not have hit on one first or second round draft pick in near a decade, that worm needs to turn, because if you're not producing some good cheap labor, you know, especially the guys who are bonus babies that you're giving them millions of dollars because you think they're going to be good, cheap major league labor at some point, you start chasing your tail and it becomes really, really expensive at the major league level. And that's where the Astros are now for a non-super team.
I mean, if we believe the reports that some of the executives in MLB were asked about what Brown got in the Tucker trade, most of the reports were pretty positive. They thought that the Astros did pretty well with that. I think if they would, Arenado would have waived his no trade clause, I would be really disappointed with what Dana Brown did this offseason. So, you know, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. But, you know, as we sit here right now, I like it. One of the big things I looked at was they say they're going to compete every year, right? So, you know, how has Walker been in the postseason? You know, that was something I went and looked to his stats. I was just curious. And, you know, postseason, he has a 230 batting average overall in his entire postseason career. So, and it's good to see that this is a guy that's played in World Series and he's been in big moments. I thought it was good in 2023 when he started that first wild card game on that run to the World Series. Three hits in that game, two RBI. So the moment didn't seem too big when the postseason got going in 2023. He was just kind of average over the NLDS, the NLCS. You know, in the World Series, he had six hits in five games with a couple doubles. So, you know, nothing spectacular, but nothing to where you're like, oh, woof, he didn't even hit 200 in the postseason. You know, nothing like that. But I thought that was fair to bring that up, because that was one of the big knocks on Kyle Tucker when they traded him, was that just, man, this guy hasn't performed in the postseason. So at least with Walker, good, not great. But hopefully as Astros fans, we'll get to see a bigger sample size with him going back to the postseason with Houston.
I don't know how you guys feel, but I feel a little bit more optimistic after this deal because I thought there was a pretty good chance that Walker ends up in New York because they did have interest in him. And I figured they would be looking to spend money after losing out on Soto. So the fact that Houston gets Walker and also keeps him out of New York, I think is a good thing. Now, granted, they could end up getting Goldschmidt and that solves the problem for them as well. Yeah, no, for sure. Keeping Walker away from your competition is good. And, you know, you just got to get to the dance and see what happens. I don't think they're done yet. I think there's probably some more moves to be made. Josh, you mentioned the possibility of unloading Presley's deal. You've got to address the outfield in some form or fashion. I don't think this is the outfield that will be playing 162 games with this team. But I think overall, I feel much more optimistic now after this deal than I did immediately following the Tucker deal. I think all things considered, losing two guys who have been tent poles for your championship run and the return they've been able to get, I think Dana Brown did a fairly decent job being able to navigate this thing. Final thoughts before we're out the door on this episode, guys?
It's going to be fascinating to see what they do for an outfielder if the plan is basically once per week for Jordan out there. That leaves you 135 games. And it's not as if Myers and or McCormick offer any degree of certainty. In Myers' case, in fact, if there's a degree of certainty, he won't be a positive offensive player. McCormick, you're hoping, can dial it back to 2023, second half of 2022. But slotting Jordan at DH, the Astros have one of the worst outfields offensively in Major League Baseball. Now, the infield has good upside to it. The right side of the infield, Walker, is a borderline top five offensive first baseman. Altuve is still there at second base. Pena is a mediocre offensive shortstop. And which way does the pendulum swing for Isak Paredes?
Yeah, I think for me, come on, Jacob Melton, show us something here in spring training. You know, give us a reason to have a little enthusiasm, have some hope that get another left-handed bat in the outfield and finally have a prospect come to the big leagues and do something positive. I wouldn't bet my house on it, that's for sure. But you never know. And the Astros seem to like him. And he's right there in Sugar Land. He should be here soon. But it does concern me that Dana Brown said even if he lights up spring training, he'll probably still start in the minors, especially considering what they have. But he said that a while ago before the Tucker trade. But he probably knew that was going to be coming down anyway. So let's hope that Jacob Melton turns into just a serviceable outfielder that they can do something with the bat.
He is the hope. Because I don't want to hear from Dana Brown or anywhere else. We're optimistic about Taylor Trammell or Pedro Leon getting a fuller opportunity. 27-year-old Pedro Leon and Taylor Trammell meet Trey Cabbage. Trey Cabbage meet Taylor Trammell. I mean, come on. What are you trying at those spots? One thing about Santander and Profar, they're not going to get the long-term contracts. And obviously Jim Crane adhered to his philosophy. Christian Walker, all right, they stepped out, they paid him non-crazy money and only 3 years of it. So if you can get Santander at 3 years, gulp $66 million, maybe the Astros are in play. And of course, if they get him, it means the Yankees aren't getting him, right? They sign an outfielder, they can move Bellinger to first base. It would mean the Red Sox aren't getting him. If the Mariners actually loosen the purse strings a little, it would mean the Mariners aren't getting him or Profar. So it's a Jim Crane budgetary decision. If the choice is to stay under the first CBT threshold, so you're not paying the additional penalties of being a repeater, and you get the reset. If you were to go back over the tax in 2026, you're at that first threshold. It's a defensible decision because, again, they can look anyone in the eye right now and say, we think we have the best team in the American League West, and if we want a division, then we're in the playoffs with a chance to go to the World Series.
I think with Santander, just quickly, it's reported he wants a 5-year contract and he's really not looking for a shorter deal than that. Doesn't mean that he'll get it, but it does make sense to me that if Jim Crane's looking around at who he wants to sign, Walker was willing to take a 3-year deal. Santander wants 5. It makes me think maybe they picked one over the other, that it won't be both, but hey, hopefully I'm wrong.
Yeah, and maybe that's where the Arenado thing came in. Maybe Santander would be the answer if the Arenado trade went through, but we'll never know. We're never really going to know. We'll end it there. That's going to be it for this episode of Stone Cold Stros. If you're watching on YouTube, be sure to click like on the video. And if you listen on podcasts on places like Apple or Spotify, do us a solid and give us a 5-star rating. Charlie, Josh, and I, we're going to join you on Monday for our continued off-season coverage, but you don't have to wait that long to get your Houston sports fix. All you have to do is subscribe to this channel, Sports Map Houston, and our other channel, Sports Map Texans on YouTube, because we're going to have more content for you, including a live reaction following Saturday's Chiefs game on our other channel, Sports Map Texans. So make sure you subscribe to that channel for our Texans on Tap podcast. Thanks for listening. Until next time, go Stros.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.